You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The current generation of young adults has had to deal with the most selective college admissions, record-high tuitions, and a struggling job market once they graduate. It's no wonder that the high-salaried positions on Wall Street are an attractive option for many of them. When she was in her sophomore year at Duke, facing tens of thousands of dollars in student debt, Laura Newland began searching for opportunities in finance that could lead to that six-figure salary, and she's written about the relationship between Wall Street banks and prestigious higher education institutions in her book called Chasing Zeros, The Rise of Student Debt, The Fall of the College Ideal, and One Overachiever's Misguided Pursuit of Success. It is published by Stonehall Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Laura Newland to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, Duke is a great school, the school that you attended, but it's also very expensive. Why insist on going there when there are a number of really fine but less expensive options, like state universities?
Yeah, so I grew up in a small college town in Alabama, actually the town of Auburn, where there is a large state school there. But I had always had my sights set on getting out of Alabama, going out of state for college, because I really believed that that would open up the most opportunities for me. That was something I had always believed. So it seemed natural to me to look at the country's elite schools when I was applying for colleges, and my parents made a commitment to make it possible. But, of course, I would be shouldering some of the financial burden as well.
Because your family was not affluent.
My family is your typical upper middle class family that lives comfortably. But when it comes to paying for college in today's world, it is very, very expensive.
And how much did Duke cost when you entered?
Duke, I believe, all costs included, is between $40,000 and $50,000 a year.
So we're talking about $200,000 at least.
Yes.
By the time you graduate, was there a possibility of getting a scholarship to ease the economic burden?
So I did not receive any scholarships. I did receive some financial aid. So between my parents' commitment, the financial aid that Duke offered, that covered some of the cost, and then I took on some student debt to cover the rest.
How much student debt?
I'd rather not say the exact number, but it was definitely—
You're still paying it?
It was enough to affect the way that I viewed my career prospects upon graduation, and it definitely changed the way that I experienced college and looked at jobs.
Did you think that a degree from a prestigious university was worth the expense?
At this point, it's tough to say. I don't regret my Duke experience, but there was a lot about my time at college that I was completely unprepared for. And so much about today's college experience that I don't think students and parents are aware of. And that's actually why I set out to write Chasing Zeros.
Like what?
So there are a lot of forces at play today that are changing the American college experience. I think that today's college experience has morphed into something that my parents' generation probably wouldn't even recognize. I talk about three of those forces that are at play in my book. So I talk about the rising levels of student debt at both the undergraduate and graduate level. And that is drastically distorting students' career choices upon graduation. I also talk about my generation. I think we've been called the entitled generation or the me generation for a reason. And now we're seeing how that plays out now that we're graduating from college and entering the workforce. And then I also talk about this phenomenon on elite campuses, which is the presence of Wall Street.
And what were your original plans when you arrived at Duke? What kind of career did you want to have? Were you thinking Wall Street from the start?
No. So I arrived at Duke, and I had never even heard of Goldman Sachs. I didn't know what that was.
You really came from a small town in Alabama.
And I didn't know what I wanted to study. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And I really thought that that was okay. I was going into a liberal arts college, and I expected that liberal arts education. And what I found and what I was so unprepared for was this hyper-competitiveness and this pre-professionalism that was so prevalent among the student body. And even though many of my peers may not have selected their majors yet or even narrowed down their interests yet, they were already doing everything they could to prepare themselves for a career.
Were you attracted to banking?
I gradually became attracted to banking. It's something that snuck up on me. I quickly learned that Wall Street jobs are the most prestigious and the most sought after. And so that's how it entered my consciousness.
So it wasn't so much that you thought banking would be a lot of fun, a fascinating career. It was more that you could make a lot of money at it and pay off your debt.
So that was definitely a big part of it. So I actually entered this Wall Street chase during my sophomore year. And that's because I was looking for a summer internship. Internship experiences are very important to have on your resume. And unfortunately, most summer internship experiences are unpaid. So if you come from a well-off family, your parents can support you for a summer in New York or D.C. But I didn't have that luxury. And so I was looking for this opportunity. And Wall Street is perhaps the only industry that will hire and pay underclassmen for internships. So that's where I set my sights.
At the start of your sophomore year, you began meeting with a career advisor and a professor who were preparing you for this. The professor, Emma, acted as the linchpin between Duke and Wall Street, and she even founded the Financial Education Partnership. What does that?
Yeah, so Emma is an economics professor at Duke and also a former Goldman Sachs banker. And she has made it her mission to prepare Duke students for Wall Street and to send even more students into the industry. All this despite the fact that Duke is a liberal arts campus and does not even offer a finance major.
So yeah, I would have thought Harvard, but they're all coming to recruit at Duke.
Oh, Harvard as well. So just to throw a statistic out there, at Duke as well as at Harvard and Columbia, even the University of Pennsylvania's engineering school, for all of those schools' classes of 2012, students were more likely to go into the finance industry than any other field.
You say recruiting is a game that's played and acknowledged by both sides. How's the game played?
Yeah, so there's certain rules, these unwritten rules that you need to learn before entering the Wall Street chase. And one of those rules is you never mention money. So if you're going to be asked, why do you want to work on Wall Street? You will be laughed out of the room if you say it's because you heard that you could earn six figures. That's one of the unwritten rules.
But that's an unwritten rule everywhere. If you want to write for the New York Times, you never say you have to say, because the New York Times has always been my dream, the greatest newspaper in the world. You never say, well, because it's a plum job and I'll become famous. So were you good at the game?
I think I did learn the rules of the game. It took a while. And a lot
of... You were 19 years old
when
you started playing this game.
I was. And a lot of what you'll read about in the book was how much I stumbled along the way. And I learned as I went along. But eventually I did learn the rules. And I was given an offer to work on Wall Street as an intern at the end of my junior year. And so I guess you could say I did end up playing the game very well. But I turned down that offer.
And we'll find out why in a moment. My guest is Laura Newland. Her book, Chasing Zeros, The Rise of Student Debt, The Fall of College of the College Ideal, and One Overachiever's Misguided Pursuit of Success. There are also nonprofit and government career fairs at colleges. Are they well attended?
Yeah, so I think that colleges are beginning to make more of an effort to offer these alternatives to Wall Street. But those fairs do not have the pull, and they certainly don't attract the number of employers that the corporate career fairs attract.
And you talked briefly about Teach for America and its relationship with big banks, specifically J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and Bain. How is their partnership mutually beneficial?
Yeah, so Teach for America does a lot of good work, but they do present themselves as this organization that's creating lifelong teachers and lifelong education advocates. But what they're really doing is they're partnering with these big banks and saying to their potential teachers that you can come work for Teach for America for 2 years, and when you're done with that 2-year commitment, you will be directly and heavily recruited by these banks. And it's a side of Teach for America that I think undermines its mission.
You write that at Duke, the term business has morphed into a synonym for the two narrow fields of finance and consulting. Were you interested in those fields? And right now you work as a consultant, don't you?
Right. So I went to the Career Center as a sophomore, and I was thinking about majoring in economics at the time. And I remember saying to my career counselor, I'm interested in business. And I expected for him to present to me these opportunities in fields like the media and entertainment industry or the sports industry or the consumer products industry. To me, that's what business means. But on these elite campuses where Wall Street has such a grasp, business primarily means finance. And then the consulting industry does have significant pull as well.
Well, my experience is there are only a limited number of jobs in on Wall Street, but when people are fired from their jobs, they wind up becoming consultants. Not true?
That may be true for some people.
In an article for the Huffington Post you wrote last week, you say that campuses turn a blind eye to the abuses of an industry that precipitated an economic collapse.
Yeah.
Our economic crisis, as we know, was largely caused by some things that happened on Wall Street that some people are upset not being prosecuted.
Right.
But companies are paying fines.
Right. And in that article, I drew a parallel because the Ivy League blocked ROTC from recruiting on campus because of the discriminatory don't ask, don't tell policy. And I asked why they would take a stand against that policy, which I am completely opposed to, but why they would take a stand against that, but then turn around and so warmly welcome and even encourage the presence of an industry that is widely considered to have defrauded taxpayers of $700 billion.
Well, talk about cheating. You, during your junior year, came to New York for 4 months with 20 other Duke students, finally saw Wall Street. Because there was so much competition, there must have been an incredibly competitive atmosphere. Did you encounter cheating?
Yeah. So there were instances during my time at Duke of hearing about students who lied on their resume. And it was during that time I spent in New York that I had, maybe you could call it somewhat of a rival in this program that I was participating in. And I witnessed her participate in some very shady tactics to get ahead. And I don't want to give too much away, but I do talk about a lot of the sabotage and some of the cheating that does go on to get these jobs.
So it's not just a matter of promoting yourself. You also have to stab other people in the back?
Well, you are competing directly against your peers for these jobs. And that is your comparison. And there's a lot at stake.
Now, you also talk about the interviews you have at these places. You landed your first one at J.P. Morgan, and you have to prepare for them because there are certain approaches that the companies use when they're doing these interviews, like the stress interview and the airport test approach.
Yeah, so interviews, you can prepare for only to a certain extent because you have to expect the unexpected. There are two scenarios that you learn to prepare for, one of which is the silent treatment. So you may walk into the room and your interviewer doesn't even acknowledge you, and you may try and start a conversation and you are completely ignored. Another situation is one in which...
And what do they gain by that?
So what they are trying to do is to make you uncomfortable. They want to put you in a high-stress situation and see how you react. So another scenario is that they will become outwardly hostile, and they may start yelling at you, even cursing, challenging everything that you say. And again, the point is just to see how you react under stress. But really, what they are doing is they're making a mockery of people who are trying to work for them.
And it's obvious, if you are preparing for this, that this is a game that's played by two sides.
It is. It is. And they should be evaluating for whether someone is a team player, whether they are articulate. And instead, they're just making them purposely uncomfortable.
And so what do you do?
So I had a few interviews that...
I mean, imagine you came on the show, and I introduced you, and then I sat here silently.
I would probably just talk for 30 minutes about my book. Maybe I'd pick up a copy and read a chapter to your audience. It's a bit harder when you're interviewing for a job in an industry that you know so little about. And I think that's this paradox about Wall Street's presence on elite campuses is that they are attracting students, many of whom have never even taken a single finance class. And then they want more than anything to become a banker.
My guest is Laura Newland. Her book, Chasing Zeros, The Rise of Student Debt, The Fall of the College Ideal, and One Overachiever's Misguided Pursuit of Success. You were applying for positions in 2008 and 2009 during a time when the economy was really struggling. How did that affect the hiring process at the big banks?
Yeah, so there were far fewer internships that were available while I was going through the process during my junior year. So this was during the spring of 2009. So as the economy was crumbling around me and it was becoming increasingly apparent that Wall Street was to blame. And it was during this time that I was going to all of these events at banks and going through interviews, and I realized how little blame the bankers accepted, and they almost laughed it off. As long as they still had a job, they were happy. And that's when I realized I didn't want to be there.
Well, Americans were angry at the finance industry for the same reasons that many of the students like you who were looking for these jobs found it attractive.
Yeah, that's a point I make in the book, is that here was an industry that did so poorly, and yet, at the end of 2008, they paid out billions and billions in bonuses, which was the sixth highest tally on record, even though they were laying off people and bringing down the economy. And to a college student, it's somewhat appealing to say, here's an industry that will pay me well and give me a big bonus even in bad times.
Were you aware of just how stressful these jobs are? The New York Times and the Wall Street Journal had articles recently about Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and others giving overworked junior staffers some time off each month because they were suffering health problems due to overwork.
Yeah, I was aware of that. And that's something that people talked about. But it almost brought out people's competitive instincts, because it's so easy for you to buy into this idea of, I'm tough enough to do this for just 2 years. And it's kind of the survival of the fittest competition. And it really speaks to our competitive instincts.
You also interviewed for a consulting firm, and you tell a disturbing story of an interviewer trying to take advantage of you. What happened?
Yeah, so I was asked to meet with a consultant at this firm that I had an interview with, and he was going to help me prepare for the interview. And that's exactly what we did. But then he tried to take it further and get me to come back to his place. And it was a very uncomfortable situation. And I know he had done the same thing with another female in my program. And it was sad to see that that was a part of the process.
You say that recruiting began to feel like dating gone wrong.
It did. You go to an interview and it may feel like this really good first date, and then you sit by the phone waiting for a call, and it may never come.
So let's talk about what you mentioned earlier. After months of interviews at big banks, consulting firms, and insurance agencies, J.P. Morgan offered you the summer internship that you'd interviewed for months before, and you turned it down?
Yeah, so it actually wasn't J.P. Morgan. It was another financial firm. But I was given this offer, and this was at the end of the semester, and I had seen so much that I realized I did not want to go into that industry. And this,
despite the fact that you had all the student debt, and going into it would have helped you pay it off pretty quickly.
Right. So I ultimately was able to find a job that has helped me pay off my student debt. But I realized there are other ways I could do that other than selling my soul to finance.
So you're glad you walked away from it?
Very glad. No regrets.
Well, now you've written a book. So does that mean you, after all of these classes you took in finance, you now want to be a writer?
Yeah. So writing is my true passion. As I mentioned, I'm a full-time consultant, but I'm a part-time writer. Writing is what I love. Now that I have paid off my student debt and now that I have written this book, I'm hoping to leverage it to get into a more creative field full-time, because that's what I love to do.
Have you spoken to other people who are going through the same process? Is this a personal, in the end, does this come down to a personal reaction to the way the business world works?
So I think my story is a very common story. People become disillusioned. And for me, it perhaps happened earlier in the process, because it happened before I even got to Wall Street. But I think there is this story that's playing out on elite campuses across the country of students arriving and thinking they're going to get a liberal arts education, and instead realizing that our higher education system operates like a business and so warmly welcomes this industry that's not creating value.
Laura Newland graduated cum laude from Duke University it's 3 years ago?
Yes.
With a Bachelor of Science in Economics. Her writing has appeared in the New York Times, Deal Book, and the Huffington Post, and she has a book now called Chasing Zeros, The Rise of Student Debt, The Fall of the College Ideal, and One Overachiever's Misguided Pursuit of Success. It is published by Stonehall Press. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.